Hello and welcome to the Scholar Circle, scholarcircle.org. I'm Maria Armudian. In this hour, recent escalations in Israel's war have killed or wounded the equivalent of one classroom of children every day, according to the deputy chief of the UN Children's Fund. Its attack on Lebanon has created both a humanitarian crisis and a potential collapse of the Lebanese government. We explore this attack, the role of Hezbollah, and the future of Lebanon from two different perspectives. Doug Becker explores.
I'm Doug Becker. Israel's attacks on Lebanon continue. This is March, and the nation has been devastated by war. Ostensibly, as a reaction to Hezbollah's retaliatory attacks to Israel's decision to kill Iranian Supreme Leader Ali Khamenei, Israel seems to be adopting the same strategy in Lebanon as it's had in Gaza. Their stated goal is to eliminate Hezbollah, or at least degrade the organization sufficiently to make it impossible for them to attack Israel. This is despite an ongoing campaign that has actually drastically weakened the organization previously. And the destruction of Lebanon, including attacks on the capital of Beirut and its suburbs, is widespread. Will the nation collapse? What's the level of destruction? When will the war end? And what exactly is the role of Hezbollah in Lebanon here in 2026? We're going to pose these questions to two different scholars, but we're interviewing them in separate segments for this show. And in the first, our guest is Yerya Tashin. He is International Affairs Cluster Coordinator at Issam Affairs Institute for Public Policy and International Affairs, or IFI, and is a part-time instructor at American University of Beirut. He's a regular contributor to Armenian Weekly with articles such as U.S. Policy in the South Caucasus, Keep Turkey In, Russia Down, and Iran Out. Yerya, thank you so much for joining us. And I know you're in Beirut now. So first of all, I hope you're safe. And I know there's been quite a bit of destruction. Can you describe what Beirut is like today and what it's been like the last few days?
First of all, thank you. I mean, thank you, Douglas. Thank you also, Ankine, for inviting me. One of the questions that you have raised, when the war will end, I think this will be a long war. To be, I mean, very fair, my friends, they tell me always I'm a pessimist. I tell them I'm a realist person. And this war will have severe consequences on Lebanon. But let me tell you the humanitarian situation, because this is something important. Sometimes, as political scientists or geopolitical experts, we try to overpass the humanitarian crisis. This is, I think, important to reflect on it. So, this crisis, the humanitarian crisis in Lebanon, I can say that it has reached an unprecedented levels of following the latest war. The recent fighting has dramatically also worsened the conditions. We have almost more than 1 million IDPs, which have been displaced in the matter of weeks, while also around 1,000 people have been killed. And the basic infrastructure, including schools, hospitals, water systems, especially in the south and the southern suburbs of Beirut, have been destroyed. And since yesterday, Israel also started bombing all the bridges connecting the south to Mount Lebanon. So basically, there is a plan to also isolate the south. So the crisis is therefore not only conflict driven, but layered on top of long-standing structural vulnerabilities, making recovery, I think, and response significantly more difficult in the future. The Lebanese government actual response has been constrained, I can say, by both political fragmentation and also limited state capacity, mainly, I mean, because of the financial crisis and so forth. So the authorities have primarily focused on diplomatic effort, calling the international community to mediate and support a ceasefire. However, at the same time, of course, the ministries are engaging in humanitarian effort, but implementation remains heavily dependent on international donors and NGOs, because the state institutions actually lack the financial and the logistic means. Underground situation is increasingly dire, I can say, and visible in every life, particularly in the cities like Beirut. Schools and public buildings have been converted into overcrowded shelters. And here, this is important to note that in Lebanon, we don't have shelters. You know, we are a war zone country. but we don't have underground shelters. Before the Civil War, we used to have some, which is interesting, but now no. So we don't have these families, the IDPs also, they don't have access to electricity, clean water, adequate sanitation, and so forth. So daily routine has been deeply disrupted. I mean, families are also struggling to secure food. Healthcare services are also overstretched. So despite but these hardships, there is something here, a positive that we always have to point when it comes to us as Lebanese. The communitarian activism in Lebanon and the grassroots activism is are real heroes on the ground. Everyone's becoming volunteer. You know, like I would say that AM, we are workers, or we are working in our institutes or work and so forth. And the evening, we are engaging in volunteering activism despite all the political differences that we have. So, local communities and aid organizations are attempting to fill the gaps through volunteer networks and also emergency assistance. However, this is not sufficient because we need humanitarian aid, because the coming humanitarian crisis will be very severe.
And you had suggested, sort of overcoming some of the communitarian or sectarian violences, right? Could you describe a bit what do we mean by the different sectarian differences, in Lebanon? Maybe a little bit of a history lesson as to, what has been these sectarian challenges within Lebanon that's driven some of this conflict?
Lebanese political system, and it's a parliamentary system, we say it is a parliament, a consociation democracy, where there are different communities. We have 18 official sects, Christian and Islamic. So these two religions are composed of many sects. So and the representation in the public sector, starting the parliament to the government, is proportional to the census that was made in 1932. And for sectarian reasons, later we don't have census. I mean, back then, in the Taif Agreement after the Civil War in 1990, so the sectarian balance was 50%. 50% for Christians and 50% for the Muslims. But of course, we know that after 1990, there was demographic shifts in the country. So it's no more 50-50, but at least in the public sector, this quota has been still preserved, I can say. For example, I mean, there is an oral agreement where the president should be a Maronite Christian, the prime minister should be a Sunni Muslim, while the speaker of the parliament should be Shia Muslim. And of course, in the government, there is proportion. For example, in the parliament, the Armenian have six seats and so forth. So everything is proportional. And this sometimes actually stagnates the policy making in the country, because these communities are to some extent dependent on certain sectarian political parties, and there is a veto power to each sect in decision making. So this also hinders decision making, especially when it comes to budgetary issues or economic or financial or social issues. However, at the same time, this sectarian, let's say, mechanism has preserved certain communities to survive, at the same time to have a certain autonomy when it comes to, let's say, making or building their education, social, and healthcare system. So every community is like a state within the state.
Okay, and since the war seems to be at least ostensibly about degrading Hezbollah, what has Hezbollah's role been in Lebanese politics and Lebanese society? And has that changed over the course, particularly the last few years, or at least the last couple of decades?
First, we have to understand that, and we have to be here objective and not emotional, that Hezbollah's presence or establishment was a result of the political and the state vacuum in the south. There was Israeli occupation. The Palestinians were launching attacks from the Palestinian militias were launching attacks from South Lebanon to Israel, and Israel was bombing indiscriminately South Lebanon and also targeting the people, the civilians. Mostly Shias, because South Lebanon has been like historically majority a Shia Muslim populated area. And the government was not able to respond for many reasons, sometimes maybe due to sectarian reasons, sometimes geopolitical reasons, and sometimes because the army was insufficient to help, because it lacked resources, because also there was a civil war in the country, especially from 1975 to 1990. The first Israeli invasion happened in 78, and the second one is in 82. And Hezbollah was founded in 82. Of course, it's not secret that The IRGC helped Hezbollah to be established. Ideologically, it is linked to Iran, and also the fighters of Hezbollah were inspired by the ideology of the Iranian revolution. And their main aim during the establishment was to expel the Israeli occupation forces from South Lebanon. So during its early years, Hezbollah combined guerrilla warfare with social service, also provision building legitimacy, especially among the marginalized Shia communities through networks of education and welfare institutions. The following of the Israeli withdrawal from southern Lebanon in 2000, Hezbollah gradually transformed from a purely militant group into a hybrid actor, combining armed resistance with formal political participation. So for the first time after 2000, it entered the political system. It took part in the parliamentary elections. It had a parliamentary bloc. When it won many seats and also became part of successive governments. So Hezbollah has been part of the Lebanese government since 2000. But at the same time, I mean, it has engaged in political participation, but also has always maintained its independent military wing. So the group's role expanded, especially after the 2006 war between Israel and Hezbollah, where to some extent, statistically, I can say it was a victory in favor of Hezbollah. Because for the first time, a deterrence was established between Israel and Hezbollah. Every time Israel aimed to bomb, the Hezbollah also bombed Israeli cities. So Israel started calculating before attacking Lebanon. And this actually elevated its status domestically and regionally as a part of the so-called axis of resistance, where in addition to Hezbollah, there were other non-state actors based in Iraq and Yemen, where they were aligned with Iran. But at the same time, this has deepened the internal division within Lebanon over its arms and autonomy from the state. Because after 2011, Hezbollah also took part of the Syrian civil war, and this also polarized the Lebanese society. In the past decade, Hezbollah's roles, we can say that it has evolved, reflecting also broader regional dynamics. I mean, today Hezbollah functions simultaneously as a political party and a powerful armed group, despite the fact that the 2024 war was, I can say, from a military perspective, it was a defeat for Hezbollah. But it seems that still Hezbollah is fighting. And I'm not a military strategist here to say how and where they were hiding, what they were doing. But everyone is surprised, including Israeli military experts, that how come Hezbollah revived itself and still is able to use anti-tank missiles against Israeli tanks and preventing Israeli incursion in the south until now. I mean, I'm not aware what or I don't know what will happen tomorrow, but still, at least until now. So this evolution has made it a central player in the regional geopolitics also, but also a source of ongoing controversy and tension within Lebanon, because there are debates in Lebanon, especially debates still continue over the sovereignty of Lebanon and how Hezbollah, the existence of the military wing of Hezbollah, sometimes, I mean, contradicts the state sovereignty. So, and the balance between the state sovereignty and the non-state power, it is, I think, still an ongoing debate in Lebanon. And let's not forget that a few days or a week ago, the Lebanese government also took a decision to dissolve Hezbollah's military wing. I mean, this is, of course, still it's ink on the paper because you have to translate this on the ground, and the state does not have this mechanism. I mean, so we will see what will happen later.
And you listen to Scholar Circle, scholarcircle.org. I'm Doug Becker. We're talking about Israel's attack in Lebanon, the war in Lebanon. Our guest today is Yair Tashin. He is of the IFI, the Issam Affairs Institute for Public Policy, International Affairs, and also a part-time instructor at the American University of Beirut. So with that in mind, I mean, and what you've described, I know at different times the Lebanese government has been directed, whether from UN resolution, from the Israelis, from Americans, etc., to disarm Hezbollah. And I think what you're describing is they just don't have the ability to do so. They don't have the, you know, the Lebanese don't have the strength to do that. What is this is a tricky question, I know, but I'm going to go ahead and ask it and realize the answer is probably complicated. What is the Lebanese attitude, the Lebanese people's attitude about Hezbollah? Are they generally supportive, generally opposing, fearful? How popular is Hezbollah in Lebanon?
Starting from the first point that Yeah, I do agree that the government now doesn't have the ability, because also the government and we as people are concerned that this may lead to internal clashes and trigger another civil war. This is why the dissolution of Hezbollah's military wing should also be linked to the complete Israeli withdrawal of Lebanon. We cannot talk of state sovereignty when there is occupation. Otherwise, occupation will legitimize any militant action, whether that comes from Hezbollah or anything. I mean, this is the history that tells us. This is why I think Lebanese government should also continue its engaging in diplomacy, and also continue lobbying for the complete withdrawal of Israeli troops from Lebanon. Then, of course, some guarantees are needed. The demarcation of the border in the south is very important, and also the reconstruction of the south. The state should be the agency to reconstruct the south, not other country, the state, the Lebanese state, and this is something important. And here also why, I mean, how also Hezbollah is perceived by the Lebanese people. So the position of the Lebanese political parties mainly towards Hezbollah has long been divided along ideological, sectarian, and geopolitical lines. And this divide has been sharpened mainly amid ongoing also regional tensions, because there is a book, I think, written by David Hurst. He argues, the title is "Beware of Small States, Lebanon, the Middle," something like this, "The Middle of the Middle East," where he argues that Lebanon has been always a reflection of the Middle East. Whatever happens in the Middle East, whether there is a sectarian war or something, it always reflects because of the sectarian dynamics in Lebanon. So there are some political parties, for example, aligned with Hezbollah. Generally, they view the party as both a legitimate political actor and also a resistance force against Israel. The main argument here is that actually its armed wing remains necessary due to Lebanon's continued vulnerability and the weakness of the state's defense capabilities. And there are some people within Lebanon, they believe, they support Hezbollah, they view it as a resistance actor, especially, of course, in the Shia community. In contrast, there are also political parties associated with opposing camps, such as the Lebanese forces, the Kataib Party, and others, mainly in the Christian and also the Sunni community. They tend to distinguish between Hezbollah's political role and its armed state status, which they strongly oppose. So these parties argue that the existence of the independent military force undermines also the state sovereignty and risk dragging Lebanon into regional conflict and Lebanon becoming a proxy battleground of Iran, Israel, US, and so forth. So the position of there is also, I want to also add here the position of the sometimes the Lebanese government, because it also reflects to some extent how the people view. So the position of the Lebanese government also, which Hezbollah has been part, has historically been one of the, I can say, ambiguity and compromise, reflecting the country's also fragile power-sharing system. So successive governments have often avoided directly confronting Hezbollah's weapons. Instead, they have adopted a very careful wording, especially when it comes to ministerial statements, that recognize the right of Lebanon to resist occupation while emphasizing also the authority of the state. And Hezbollah has argued that, saying that we are not against the authority of the state, but the state also should liberate the lands. So within this balance, always the one who has suffered has been the state. This balancing at the same time act allows cabinets to maintain to some extent internal stability and prevent also political paralysis, especially given that Hezbollah's representation within government coalition has been always, because you cannot ignore Hezbollah. It has a parliamentary bloc, so it has to be, and also through its alliance with the Amal movement, another Shia political party, they both represent the majority of the Shia community, and the Shia community has to be present in the government, so they have to have ministers. And this is the, I mean, the issue of the political sectarianism in the country. So as a result, I mean, the cabinet stance is less a coherent policy and more a reflection of Lebanon's broader political fragmentation and the necessity, of course, of coexistence among, of course, divided or deeply divided, let's say, factions in Lebanon.
I want to return to that question, but first, In the past, Israel has sought its security on its northern border by occupying southern Lebanon. They withdrew, obviously, in 2000, but there's been quite a bit of speculation that they might try to create something, whether it's a buffer zone or once again reoccupy southern Lebanon. How much is Lebanon fearing either a sort of a complete sort of, ethnically cleansing or, depopulating of a buffer zone or even Israeli control of southern Lebanon in some version of a return to its pre-2000 when it withdrew?
I'm very concerned of that because when the recent ceasefire was established in 2024 November, there were 5 points still occupied by Israelis, and Israelis didn't withdraw. And I know that some ministers in the Lebanese cabinet even they tried to suggest the Americans that tell the Israelis to withdraw at least from 1 point, and we can also convince Hezbollah to engage in compromise. Like 1 step and 1 step from us. The Israelis refused that. So the occupation, also from Hezbollah's perspective, it legitimized Hezbollah. And if Israel continues occupying, I mean, it's already now engaging in incursions in South Lebanon and deploying thousands of forces, it seems that the Israeli objective is to so-called cleanse Hezbollah from the south. But this also will create problems because, I mean, this is something that we have to ask. Who is Hezbollah? Any farmer can be also Hezbollah. Any doctor also can be. Any engineer, any professor can be also Hezbollah. Hezbollah is not, this is probably in the Western, I always ask. It's not like someone with a beard and always wearing a black with AK-47 in his head. I mean, everyone can be because it is a political party based on ideology, and this ideology is deeply rooted in the society. So this is very important. This is why, I mean, sometimes we have to differentiate between the political and the military wing of the party. My concern is that Israel will continue engaging in sectarian cleansing in the south, and this will create social tensions in Beirut and other places in Lebanon because we have the IDPs, we have more than 1 million IDP, and where these people will go. And the more we pressure them, and the more this war is prolonged, it means that it will have time for them to return back to their houses. And God forbid if Israel occupies or annexes South Lebanon, as it has done to Golan in Syria, we are heading for a civil war. We are heading towards internal explosion because you have at least 20% of your country occupied, and you don't have the means to liberate this 20%, and the government is unable also to liberate it through diplomatic means, unless, of course, there is a certain agreement with Israel. And I'm concerned again, is that what kind of agreement will happen? We don't know the details. The government and the president said that they are ready for direct talks. Okay, but what will be the contact? Because Israel has certain preconditions. And of course, some of these preconditions will not be in favor of Lebanese state. This is concern. Of course, some people are saying that let's go forward with it, whatever are the consequences, so that at least we can have a ceasefire. Okay, but also we have to look at the future. What will be? Will the IDPs return to the south? I mean, the return of the internally displaced people and the liberation of the south. And the reconstruction should be a priority because otherwise we're triggering internal conflict. Even if we have the so-called peace or ceasefire with Israel, we have to engage in both ways to end occupation. At the same time, the people should return back. And then, of course, there should be internal dialogue between the key between the state, the army, so that we see what will happen with Hezbollah.
I'm going to ask a question that probably is a little bit unfair, but always, comes to mind when it comes to Lebanon. Lebanon is this sort of experiment in governance based on communitarian and, on sectarian identity. And at the end of the day, it seems like the sectarian identity seems to be more important than the Lebanese identity, or at least the way in which power is divided. Has there been any sort of movement in Lebanon to maybe reconsider governance, because the sectarian division of power sure doesn't seem to be working very well with respect to strengthening a state and being able to defend itself? Or is the idea of sectarian governance within Lebanon so deeply rooted that it's almost impossible to imagine governing the state without it?
Now it is deeply rooted. Though the Taif Agreement has mentioned that one of the clauses, important clause of Taif Agreement, was to desectarianize the parliament and then also create a Senate so that the Christians, the presence of the political presence of the Christians are preserved in the Senate. Because to be very honest, in a desectarianized parliament, the representation of the Christians would be much, much less than 50%. And there is concern that if Hezbollah and its allies bring a majority in such a parliament, so it means the state also would be in war with Israel, not just Hezbollah. What will be the consequences? I mean, these are debates that are going in the media between experts and political commentators and everything. But if we're going to implement the Taif Agreement, then all the provisions should be implemented and we should not be selective. And this is something important. My concern that if this war continues and is prolonged and the state institutions collapse, then we may go to a new scenario where the sectarian proportion in the or the representation in the public sector will be revisioned. But to achieve there or to go there, something like internal strife or internal clash should trigger something like this. Hopefully not, but I have these concerns.
And so the last question then, it seems that Israel's policy in Iran is to weaken the state sufficiently so it could never attack. And they even seem to be not terribly concerned with the collapse of the state, in a complete state failure. Do you think that's the same strategy that they have in Lebanon? Is Israel concerned, do you think, that the Lebanese state could collapse? Or would they view that positively because it would make Lebanon so weak it couldn't attack?
Well, the main objective of the US and Israel, I remember, was to, they said that, the people should go to the streets, we will liberate Iran and so forth. Now I think it's the third week and almost 1 month we are entering. And now they are shifting there because they have underestimated Iran. And also, whether we like it or not, I mean, this is the reality. I'm not an expert in Iran domestic affairs, but I didn't see huge protest. Despite the fact that all the first ranking leaders have been assassinated or liquidated. Now, why? I don't know. I'm not saying that the people are supporting the Iranian state, but it seems that whether they are not ready or they are concerned of the future, because even, I mean, the coming of the Shah, the guy is not completely detached from the reality, to be very fair. I mean, I'm reading his statements, he's living in a la-la land. While coming to Lebanon, I think that the Israelis are not concerned of the collapsed state because they may trigger a collapsed state so that they engage their typical divide and rule policy. We saw that in Syria. They wanted to achieve an independent Druze statehood in the south and also certain autonomy of the Kurds in the northeast. They failed, and they will achieve the same. They want or to attempt to achieve the same in Lebanon. And we had this experience in the 1980s where there was the army of the south of Lebanon led by Atwal Lahad. Israel may also try to duplicate its experiment that it had done in South Lebanon in the 1980s. Hopefully not. Hopefully we'll not achieve there. But there is this concern.
We've been talking about the Israel's war in Lebanon. Will it cause the collapse of the state? And when we think this war will end? Actually, quickly then, are you optimistic that the war, will end in the next month or so, or are you expecting it's going to go on quite some time?
I think this will go at least. I mean, again, no, this is speculation. We don't know, but it seems it is a long war. It can be few weeks, months, but I pray, I hope that it stops now. Because, as I said, my concern is the implications and the consequences of this war on the government and on the domestic front. I have concern then what will happen with the government. And what will happen with the state institutions? President and the Prime Minister said that they are ready for direct talks with Israel. We have to see that what will happen. And Hezbollah and the others are against that. And then also the Lebanese government took a decision to disarm or dissolve Hezbollah's military wing. If Israel failed to do that, then the pressure on the Lebanese government will increase. So how the Lebanese government will do and what are the consequences? And third, also, what will happen with Hezbollah's ministers in the government? Will they stay there? Will they call to the oust of the Lebanese government? These are some concerns. This is why I hope that we, as Lebanese, especially people at my generation, older, that I haven't seen the civil war, but I know people have seen, at least my generation have seen a lot of wars and civil strife. I hope that we learn from our mistakes. And the only solution in Lebanon is dialogue. People will hate that, but this is, we have to understand each other. We have to understand the pain of our each other. Yes, I mean, sometimes compromise is not a fair deal. We have to make sure that, guys, we cannot have war every time, and we cannot become a proxy of other countries. But at the same time, we should say that, this is a problem in Lebanon, that we have geographical imaginations. If Beirut was not bombed, you see some neighborhoods in Beirut, they are partying. If when the south was bombed, people would say, it's okay, it's the periphery, the south is bombed, it's who cares? But now that the Beirut is bombed, people are like, oh my God, we have to talk about sovereignty and so forth. God, for God's sake, for 1.5 years, the south was bombed and you were not complaining. So, I mean, we always have this geographical imagination, the north, the south, the Bekaa, east, I don't care. The most important thing is Beirut. No, we have to be Lebanese, like all these areas are part of Lebanon. The government should be this caring father, typical the state character. Like we have to care everyone, so that the people from the south and the north, they feel that they are part of Lebanon. Otherwise, they will have their loyalties will be outside. And there is now another concern which we didn't discuss, but that's a very long debate about the possible Syrian involvement in Lebanon. This is very, very concerning. For me, this is like a top now concerning what will happen in the future. I cannot imagine like another Syrian invasion to Lebanon with all these radicals coming. It will be chaotic. This will trigger another civil war. We have this experience in 1975. This is why internal dialogue and state institution building should be top priority for us.
I think on that note, that's a good place to end. The importance of building state institutions, the importance of building a strong Lebanon that's able to defend itself, and a strong Lebanon that's able to maintain peace. We've been talking about the war in Lebanon, Israel's attack, and the implications this has for the state. Our guest today has been Yerya Tashin. He is the International Affairs Cluster Coordinator at Issam Affairs Institute for Public Policy and International Affairs, or IFI. He's a part-time instructor at American University of Beirut and a regular contributor to Armenian Weekly, has articles such as U.S. Policy in the South Caucasus, Keep Turkey In, Russia Down, and Iran Out. Thank you so much for sharing your time and your expertise on such an important issue.
Thank you, Douglas. Thank you.
When we come back, what has Hezbollah's role been in Lebanese society? We speak with one critic. Stay with us. This is the Scholar Circle, scholarcircle.org. I'm Maria Armudian. Israel is seeking to break the Lebanese state and potentially either seize a buffer zone or depopulate it in the south of the nation. The United Nations Interim Force in Lebanon said on Thursday that it had recorded more than 10,000 air and ground violations inside Lebanese territory since the ceasefire between Israel and Hezbollah came into effect at the end of 2024. What does all this mean for the future of Lebanon? Doug Becker explores.
And welcome back to Scholar Circle, scholarcircle.org. I'm Doug Becker. While the war Israel and the U.S. is waging against Iran is seizing our headlines, there's a second war that Israel is waging. This war is against Lebanon, ostensibly to counter the pro-Iranian group Hezbollah's retaliatory strikes for the Israeli killing of Iranian Supreme Leader Ali Khamenei. Israel's attacks have devastated Lebanon over the course of the last few weeks. And this follows a pattern of Israeli attacks on its northern neighbor. So, in this segment, we're going to explore the impact of the war on Lebanon, on the political fragility of this country, the role of Hezbollah in the future of the nation, and the impact of the war. Our guest is Makram Rabah. He is an assistant professor of history at the American University of Beirut and Lebanese American University, and the author of Conflict on Mount Lebanon, The Druze, The Maronites, and Collective Memory. Professor Rabah, thank you so much for
Thank
joining
you
us.
very much for hosting me. It's a
Thank
pleasure.
you. You're joining us from Lebanon. First, what has been the impact of Israel's attacks on Lebanon? We've heard some news reports about just how devastating these attacks have been. How devastating have they been, and are they threatening the stability of the country?
Well, I don't think there's a country to even threaten its stability to begin with. The problem now, the immediate problem of the Israeli attack, or the Israeli retaliation on Hezbollah's joining the war, is basically it has created at least up until now 1 million displaced refugees internally. So we have huge areas of the country, particularly areas which are predominantly Shiite, which had been evacuated by the Israeli army because they are systematically trying to eradicate Hezbollah's military infrastructure. As we speak, I am in my office at the American University of Beirut, one of the oldest universities in the region. About 3 miles away, Israel has hit downtown Beirut. So previously, we had this impression, or people had the impression, that the conflict will be limited to some areas. So the idea is wherever there's a Hezbollah operative or anyone who is close to Hezbollah, the Israelis are coming after it. So Hezbollah or the Lebanese are facing two scenarios: either Israel destroys Hezbollah or destroys Lebanon, and they don't really care in what order it comes, because for the last year and a half, the international community, as well as Israel, has been demanding the total disarmament of Hezbollah according to the UN Security Council Resolution 1701 plus. And the Lebanese army has dragged its feet because for various reasons, but primarily because the Lebanese sectarian system allows an Iranian militia to hide behind the fact that they represent the Shiites, which is totally absurd and totally suicidal, because ultimately the normalization of a militia like Hezbollah makes Lebanon an unviable state, and that's the main crux of the problem.
And so, I mean, the challenge, from what I understand, within Lebanon has always been that there's been numerous UN Security Council resolutions and certainly peace proposals that suggests Hezbollah operates as kind of an army, a militia, an army within the state. And at a minimum, the government has not been able to disarm them. Why is that? Is it because Hezbollah is just too strong to be disarmed? Is it a lack of political will, lack of, a lack of commitment? Why is the disarming of Hezbollah by the Lebanese state been such a challenge?
I do believe that ultimately the fact that the Lebanese sectarian system doesn't see people as citizens, but rather as members of sectarian groups, allows someone who has representation in parliament to actually claim that they have total majority vote over what happens. Ironically, yes, Hezbollah is a state within a state, and it has a powerful militia, even though they have been hit hard. Its previous Secretary General has been killed, and most of its senior members have been eradicated in the last war, but still they can hide behind the Shiites of Lebanon and to claim that without them, the Shiites of Lebanon can no longer exist, which is really a big pity because the Shiites have been part and parcel of Lebanon for centuries. I don't think an Iranian militia can actually protect them. And to add to this, the Lebanese political establishment, corrupt as it is, uses the pretext of having something like Hezbollah to say that Lebanon's problems are not internal. And to add to that, Hezbollah is part of the Lebanese government in the sense it has members in parliament and it has members in the cabinet, so to speak. At the same time, it talks about itself as if it's a member of the opposition, and it does not really recognize Lebanese legitimacy or the constitution. And ironically, in his last speech, the current Secretary General of Hezbollah said that they did not really join the war because of the killing of the supreme leader in Iran. They said, and this is an insult to anyone's intelligence, that they did this because for the last year and a half, Israel did not respect the ceasefire. Regardless, what's happening right now is a natural progression of things. I have been accused in the last decade or so of being too hawkish on Hezbollah. And the person behind me is my very good friend, Luqman Sleem, a very outspoken critic and an activist who was gunned down by Hezbollah. And he's one of many intellectuals and scholars who have been killed just because they were warning of what to come, which is exactly what's happening right now. So as a scholar and as an activist, I believe that Lebanon's liberal values and Lebanon's model of diversity cannot exist when something like Hezbollah is arming Lebanon's diverse environment to fight on behalf of Iran.
And so I know in the past, Lebanon, the government's relationship with Hezbollah has offered resistance to the Israelis in other attacks. And of course, Hezbollah being pretty strong, the inability of the Lebanese government or disinterest in the Lebanese government in disarming them has really weakened the state. But what I've been reading is that there seems to be a growing consensus on the part of the Lebanese that Hezbollah is the reason why we're being attacked, and so therefore, there's been quite a bit of turning on Hezbollah. These are news reports that I'm reading from outside. Is that accurate? And do you see any sort of political shift at this point of Lebanese political actors saying, "Okay, enough's enough. It's time that we disarm and get rid of Hezbollah"?
Actually, Douglas, this is brutally, this is br the, br the brutality of the situation, meaning that before October 7, before Hamas decided to launch its operation against Israel, Lebanon was free of Israeli occupation. It was a decision of Hezbollah to enter the so-called war of support to try to help the Palestinians, something which they did nothing about. I think Lebanon has helped the Palestinian cause by offering institutions like my institution, hospitals, civilian infrastructure, more than the lousy, archaic weapons of Tehran. So certainly there's a big objection, even within the Shiite community itself, that what Hezbollah are doing is actually an act of lunacy. Yet again, at the same time, it's actually hard to decipher the sectarian nature of the system because everyone here hides behind their sectarian credentials, which prevents basically people. When we talk about the Constitution, people think that we are joking around. The Constitution is not something to take lightly. And regardless of the reasons, yes, there were Israeli occupation, but the Israelis left in 2000. They packed up and left. But having been under Syrian hegemony under Hafez al-Assad and later his son, the dictator Bashar al-Assad, and then the killing of Rafiq al-Hariri, our larger-than-life prime minister in 2005, has led to a series of events which gradually isolated Lebanon and led the international community as well as the regional states to isolate Lebanon because Hezbollah has taken advantage of Lebanon's educational system, its financial system. It has used our banks for money laundering. All of this has caused a lot of upheaval. Yet there is a kind of a Faustian deal between the Lebanese political establishment and Hezbollah. In 2019, when we went to the streets to try to topple the corrupt government of Lebanon, it was Hassan Nasrallah, the leader of Hezbollah, that saved them. Because without corruption, something like Hezbollah can't exist. And Hezbollah was running an anarcho-state between Lebanon and Syria up until the fall of the Assad regime. All of these facts are important. Anyone in the West which feels pity for Hezbollah or whatever Hezbollah is trying to do, you need to remember that these people don't really care about Palestine, nor do they care about injustice, because they themselves are tyrants. Their own masters were shooting people on the streets of Tehran using shotguns. And what we have in Lebanon, Hezbollah is nothing short of being
the Revolutionary Guards Lebanon chapter, nothing more, nothing less.
And you listen to Scholar Circle, scholarcircle.org. I'm Doug Becker. We're talking about the war in Lebanon, Israel's attack in Lebanon this month. And our guest is Makram Rabah. He is with the American University of Beirut. Now, when we started this conversation, you said there's sort of two things going on, two trends going on, the destruction of Hezbollah and the destruction of the Lebanese state. You know, as a reminder that though there could be a possibility of Hezbollah's hold on, particularly, you know, the southern part of Lebanon and the role that it's played in Lebanon, could change as a result of this war. But the picture that you painted and what we've heard suggests the destruction of the state would A, make that more difficult because it would create space, you know, for Hezbollah and would just be devastating for Lebanon itself. Is this an opportunity to change the calculation, weaken Hezbollah and remove them? Or is the much more likely scenario just real destruction
Well,
of the state of Lebanon?
I don't think that removing Hezbollah is impossible, but removing Hezbollah will require a kind of detoxing of the environment that Hezbollah operates in. At the moment, Israelis don't really care about what happens in Lebanon. Many people are trying to rationalize what the Israelis are doing. The Israelis have been clearly communicating what they want. They are saying, we will carve out a security zone in the south of Lebanon, which will exceed 25 kilometers, which will be a buffer zone. Uninhabited by anyone. It will be a no man's land. No one can go into it. This will create a kind of humanitarian problem for Lebanon, and they are hoping that this is something that we will address ourselves. I do believe that we should never, ever bet on the Israelis cleaning up our house, not because it's a patriotic thing to do, but if you're not eligible to pick up after yourself, you're not an adult. That's why the Lebanese government should basically take the lead, and more importantly, openly ask for direct peace negotiations between the Lebanese state and the Israeli state. And then we can get the help of the international community. At the moment, the Lebanese president has asked for an immediate ceasefire that would open the way for negotiations. That's not feasible, simply because the international community and Israel looks down upon Lebanese state, which has dragged its feet for the longest time. One has to understand what we are experiencing at the moment is of our own making. We kept on justifying and, more importantly, trying to rationalize that Hezbollah, being most of its members are Lebanese, it will always do what's good for Lebanon. Yes, its membership might be Lebanese, but it's organically connected and ideologically connected to Iran. And what they did recently is nothing short of suicidal by entering a war which Donald Trump is clearly running, and the Israeli political establishment and the military establishment under Netanyahu are clearly operating according to a Trump green light. All of this leads us to believe that yes, Hezbollah can be curbed, Hezbollah can be contained and ultimately destroyed. However, we have to address the narrative and debunk the myth of Hezbollah, that Hezbollah has acted as a deterrence force against Israelis, and more importantly, that Hezbollah protects the Shiites of Lebanon, whereas in fact, it uses them as part and parcel of a vicious circle that will not stop.
It seems to me that Israel's primary motivations, certainly in Iran, is to destroy Iran's capability to fight and capability to attack, and certainly erode any ability for Iran to fund groups like Hezbollah as a result of that destruction. I would imagine that that's part of the motivation in Lebanon when you're talking about creating a 25-kilometer buffer zone and just moving populations, out of that. That would be, just devastating, obviously, for Lebanon. And Israel's also shown with their attacks in Gaza that the motivation seems to be just continue attacking, continue destroying, because the end game is destroy the region's ability to attack
Yes.
Israel. It seems like that would result in a failed state and a possibility of a return to a Lebanese civil war. How
Well,
likely is that?
I wouldn't go as far as say we go to the Civil War. As a historian on the Civil War, there's a lot of elements which are not aligned yet. This doesn't mean that if given enough time and enough political and financial investment, we will not get there. But most of the communities in Lebanon are somewhat mature when it comes to civil war. They don't believe that this will change much. Yet at the same time, I think that Israel has rightly pointed out two issues which align with what the normal Lebanese want. We don't want, Israel doesn't want proxy militias in the region and doesn't want Iranian ballistic missiles in the region, which destabilize the whole thing. Look what happened in Syria. In Syria now, the new president has been communicating the right stuff. He still has a lot of stuff to do, a lot of stuff to prove, yet he's on the right track. More so, going back to why Lebanon now is being destroyed, Hezbollah is strong not because it's Iranian dog, it's strong because it's Lebanese. Our educational system, our diverse environment would allow these young fighters, some of them are graduates of private schools and private universities, to act as strategic consultants to this axis of terror. So they have been trying to build the capacity of the Houthis in Yemen, the Iranian militias in Iraq, running a narco network from Lebanon all the way down to Colombia. And I hear ask people to Google the Cassandra Project and all of this. Remember that the Obama administration gave the Middle East to Iran and to Soleimani and these people, and they did nothing but wreak more and more destruction. I personally have no problem with them transforming into a powerful political state, but a powerful political state cannot have militias. If they want to practice soft power, if they want to use culture and ideology, that's something else, but you cannot enforce it using your gun. So ultimately, this is why Lebanon is paying the ultimate price, because it has served as a launching pad for Iran's expansionist project. And because Iran has access to the Mediterranean Sea through Hezbollah, the so-called Beirut-Tehran highway had to be demolished. But unfortunately, the Lebanese are paying the ultimate price.
Certainly, the picture that you're painting, and it matches what we're getting in news reports, is that the immediate future of Lebanon is looking pretty
Bleak.
destructive for the state. Is this going to get a lot worse before there's any hope that it gets better?
Well, certainly, because I do believe that even with the war on Iran stopping or ceasing for some weird reason, I think that it won't change in Lebanon because Netanyahu already has the green light. And some people who are listening to me might think that I am trying to get Netanyahu off the hook here. No, but anyone with a sound mind wouldn't give pretext to Netanyahu's hawkish right-wing cabinet. You wouldn't basically give them reasons, and international law gives him the right to attack you if you shoot missiles at him. Especially that Hezbollah has been branded as a terrorist organization internationally. More importantly, I think that whatever happens, as long as there is this toxic environment in Lebanon, as well as there is a sectarian system that normalizes criminality like Hezbollah, we don't know what might come out from killing this monster. Because I do believe that proxies don't really fade away, they mutate. And when they mutate, whatever medicine you're on doesn't really fix it. You need to go back and see why did this monster grow, and why and what was it fed throughout the decades. So I believe that the sectarianism in Lebanon, which has guaranteed diversity and to a certain extent has allowed the only Christian minority group to stay in Lebanon, as has become a curse. We've been blessed with a system that worked for a couple of decades, but now it has become so toxic that if we keep on using it, it will ultimately kill us all.
I do want a quick follow-up on that then, because whenever there's any analysis of Lebanon, it always centers around sectarianism, the sectarian constitution, the sectarian identities, etc. Is there movement within Lebanon to challenge sectarianism? Is the presumption that you start your analysis of Lebanon with sectarianism? Are we moving away from that?
I am not a fan of sectarianism, especially when the sectarian identity uses collective memory and weaponizes it to abolish the other. Yet, if we take, for example, Belgium, for example, Belgium has a kind of a sectarian problem, but doesn't break out into a civil war, because even in sectarianism, there are rules to the game. You cannot basically mix alcohol and drugs and like there's a, even if you want to be a stupid sectarian leader, you need to play it by the rules of the game. What we have been, even corruption. I'm really ashamed to say this. Even corrupt systems have to operate along the line that if you need to milk the cow, you can't actually kill it. You have to preserve it, you have to feed it, and more importantly, there's limits to this sectarian political game. The Lebanese have crossed this line a long time ago when they believe that, more importantly, they're like trust fund brats. They keep on spending their parents' money because ultimately they know someone will pay their credit cards on their behalf. The Lebanese, for the longest period of time, have relied on the benevolence of the international community and the Gulf state. Now it's a whole new ball game. It's a whole new future. The Lebanon and the region after October 7 and after the war in Iran will look differently. And the Lebanese need to redefine themselves vis-à-vis the area. Without doing so, we are going towards a very big black hole.
And on that pessimistic note, but a call for
That's a Gramscian call.
Gramscian call for a new Lebanon, a new definition for the state. Our guest today has been Makram Rabah. He is an assistant professor of history at the American University of Beirut and the Lebanese American University, and the author of Conflict on Mount Lebanon, the Druze, the Maronites, and Collective Memory. Thank you so much for sharing your time, your expertise, and please be safe being, in such a terrifying area.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And that's it for today's program. Thank you for listening. The Scholar Circle is hosted by Doug Becker. Its managing producer is Ankine Agassian. Sed Dongre is our webmaster and assistant producer. Our archives are at scholarcircle.org, and our podcasts are on Apple and Google Podcasts and iTunes. Please follow us on at Scholar Circle or me at Armudian and join our Facebook page. I'm the founder, anchor, and occasional host, Maria Armudian.